So today we're talking about an untapped part of the labor market, older workers. Is it really untapped? And if it is, anyways, how do we take advantage? Stay tuned. And here we are in the HR Hub podcast with me, Andrea Adams. Keep listening to learn about this and anything related to HR. You can also find me on YouTube. Today, my guest is again Laura Tamblyn-Watts. Laura is the CEO of CanAge, which is Canada's national seniors advocacy organization. Recently, she spoke at the UN on a related topic. She's been working in the field for 25 years. She's an author, a researcher, a professor, and a commentator. So many great things to bring to this conversation. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Great to be here today.
Well, thank you. Okay. So I don't know what the state of the labor market is at now. They keep threatening that we're going to have a recession. I don't know that it's happened yet, but we had been having some significant labor shortages. What is being projected and where do senior workers fit in? Or older workers? Should I not say senior workers?
Both are fine. I think it's fine. I mean, I usually use the term older workers because older is a broad and encompassing issue. And let me tell you, when it comes to what we think of as older, it really does depend on the sector we're in. In the tech sector, yes, this is where people feel really uncomfortable. You know, older workers, it's about anyone after 37, which is a bit shocking for me. So there's good news and bad news. Bad news first.
And
we are entering the most significant labor shortage that Canada has ever had. The good news is the solution's pretty simple. If we can keep our workers working a bit longer, and this is also in an environment where economics are challenging, so they actually do need to work a little bit longer, then we're okay. And that means, of course, making sure that we've got good retention strategies, that we don't do automatic things like send people out the door or sign them up for, you know, retirement planning when you turn 60
or 50
or whatever it is, that we don't do automatic things that are by their nature's ageist, and we start thinking about retention. It also means that we can think a bit more creatively. For every company that said we can't possibly work remotely or on Zoom or in a flex time, I think we saw that many of those things were overcome during the pandemic. It also allows, with more flexibility, that to be that work from anywhere a couple of months a year, that can be extremely desirous for people who may be taking care of spouses that need a little bit of extra help, or you want to go to the cottage, or you want to just spend time with family and friends in different places. Again, those were a lot of the reasons that our more aging workforce members would leave, as we didn't have those accommodations and flexibility. So for employers now who are saying, oh yeah, no, that, no, we think that the things that we've designed will really help for parents with young children, actually, those same things are the exact same aspects that most older workers would stay for if they could have. Mm-hmm. The other thing is this, they want to be given opportunities for advancement and for learning. And so if we're thinking about how to stem that labor force shortage, don't stop offering training and development at 50 or 55. And the last thing is, in some cases, people may want to go, or they may want to go on sabbatical, or, you know, generally, quote, retire for a year. You may find that actually they take such important skill sets with them that if you are able to bring them back on a contract or in a consultancy basis, you know, to be open to the idea of not losing that worker, and you may have a different, more flexible arrangement. Again, that may or may not be possible depending on how you hire. But on the end, if we don't keep people working longer, we're going to be in real trouble. And on average in Canada, it's projected that by 2030, we need people working longer by about 7.2 years. And in Canada, we mostly don't retire actually until about 65, like that is that. So we're asking, like, we need people to work into their 70s.
What are some of the most prevalent myths around older workers?
That they can't use technology. Just actually nonsense. In fact, 87% of all Canadian seniors, and that's people over 65, use the internet every single day, and they have an average of 5 internet-connected devices. Shopping online and social engagement for people over the age of 80 is skyrocketing. And over the age of 85, which is the dip point for technology traditionally, with every year, that number gets pushed out more. If they've got grandkids or they were, you know, in a difficult situation during COVID, they probably are on technology, even if they want to be on technology.
Yes.
So this notion that they can't use technology is just frankly nonsense. It does mean, however, that sometimes we need to use less jargon and bad user interface. I was listening in on a call where we had a person who was not particularly old. They were 70 years old, listening to a customer support. And they kept saying on the phone, click on the hamburger on your screen. And this was a very smart person. And they're saying, I'm sorry, sir, can you show me where that is? There's no hamburger on my screen. And this went around and around and around until some point she said, can you describe what that looks like? I feel like an idiot because I think I know what a hamburger looks like. And that's when the 20-whatever-year-old said, it's the three lines on the top of the screen. And so using jargon and assumptions, and that's frankly bad user experience, if they had something that said menu or more choices, so that's not just true of older people. That's true of all user design. But as we have generations of users of technology, you may need to actually try to do better for everybody. Second one is that older workers are checked out. And they're just resting on their heels and they're not wanting to learn or advance. Every piece of evidence says the opposite. In fact, older workers are frustrated when they're not given training opportunities and development opportunities. And that's what makes them leave.
Or they're just like sort of set aside, not included. And then it's just like, I'm not going to fight it. I'll just leave. Sorry, I'm somewhat interrupting. But that's the experience of so many of us. When we're not included, we leave.
Yes.
And then we draw and make assumptions on those things that are just completely untrue because it's actually the reverse. Interesting. Okay, go on. Sorry, I interrupted.
That older workers won't take instructions from younger people. In fact, mostly older workers don't have any problem with that. It's about quality of management. But what is true, and this is the corollary to that, this is where we use negative assumptions to put away or distract from our own inadequacies. What is true is that younger managers do not feel like they have the skills sometimes. So the loss or lack or discomfort of younger management is then reframed as older workers won't take instructions from me. But what it's really covering is a skill set that's missing in management training.
So older workers, they come with more skills. They've been in the workforce a long time. They come with all this knowledge. They've been in positions that pay more. Do they not cost more? And therefore, there's a financial reluctance to keep them on.
Sometimes. It tends to be more of an executive position or possibly a union issue, right? Like that's actually kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So if you are in those increasingly rare union jobs that have strata and years worked.
Seniority. Yep.
What you may not realize is actually unions are allowed to have mandatory retirement. And it's one of the exceptions to the no more mandatory retirement areas of discrimination. I think it's highly problematic that unions are allowed to mandatorily force retirement. And I'm waiting for someone to do the challenge on that. But in 2007, when we struck down mandatory retirement in many jurisdictions across the country, there were exceptions. So I think that that's going to be problematic. When I think about, you know, I need to cut costs, it really should be about where cost savings come from and about what's not needed at a competency level or an integrated company need level. That's not often what happens. Really. Cost-cutting measures or workforce reduction numbers is often an excuse to get rid of older people. If you look at where cuts get made, it tends to not be around the most expensive people, tends to be around the oldest people who are not necessarily the most expensive. So from the janitor to the senior executive, cuts tend to be made on age, not cost or requirement.
Next question. Many of the labor shortages, and we've been talking about labor shortages and how they can fill a gap, but many of the labor shortages are in service industries or physical labor. And this could be a stereotype, but like physical labor, like I'm older. I'm getting older. I hurt more. I don't want to get into a job doing physical labor. Is there really a fit there between what older workers want and can do and where the gaps are in the labor market?
We need to think much more carefully than we have before about what we mean by physical labor and what has been acceptable harm rates. We had a lot of people and we threw a lot of people and said, pick up these heavy things and put them over there. And because people were cheap, we didn't really care if their backs were injured or whatever else. And we often started cutting out benefits and so on because you just have more people. As benefits and coverage and insurance have been much more important, and as the cost of injury rates have been more problematic for companies, people got much smarter about health and safety issues. Health and safety comes into play much more when it costs a lot. And I'm talking from a pure economic point of view. I'm not trying to mean that people also don't care. I'm sure people do care if they look at health. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking pure numbers. If you have cheap labor, then you don't have to care so much. If you have expensive labor and it costs a lot that you can't replace, then say health and safety measures come into effect. Now we have many fewer young people who are doing physical labor and actually many fewer that want to do it.
Yes.
Which is why we have so much immigrant actual labor in many sectors, like farming is one example. We bring in large workforces. And again, the concerns about their health and safety are real because they are cheap labor. And then we go through that process. Where labor is expensive, health and safety goes up. And that means we'll have to look at what people can do. So that's one piece that we need to think about. We can bring health and safety in, can do it. It just costs more. It has to cost less than labor. When it comes to what is it we really need to do in terms of actual good old-fashioned manual labor anymore, there are actually far fewer jobs that require it because we have many more machines that we use. So we used to carry heavy packages. Now we have forklifts. Firefighters are often used as the example. It's about physical testing. It's not about age, right? We actually have, in some cases, a shortage of firefighters. This is particularly true for volunteer firefighters or firefighters in rural community. And what that's meant is that firefighters have had to do some real thinking because they don't have enough people in the door in some of those sectors. And they're in competition for labor because everyone needs labor now. So the screening for firefighters is also very high, and it's also an extremely dangerous profession.
Yeah.
So what I would offer is thinking about it in terms of age is not helpful. Thinking it in terms of who can do what, and the testing is very specific. I don't think anyone's saying that that shouldn't be the testing. I'm just saying age shouldn't have to be it. Health? Okay. Absolutely. Now, let me add one extra piece to that. When we're thinking about jobs that we're short of labor for, we're seeing certainly a trend of assessing what the tasks are and if they can be broken up. So let me take that. I'll use the firefighter's example or construction worker. Perhaps let me use the word construction worker here as well. So that's an area where we used to use a lot of brute force. Now we're using a lot more machine and machine aspects to it. Now we're using things like 3D printing in construction. So the stuff that you used to have to physically move can now be built and it can be lighter and so on. As innovation is moving forward, jobs can be segmented. And so that the people who really need that physical labor and age shouldn't be part of that, but your fitness and well-being needs to be part of that, are probably going to be now 20%, 30% of a job. And that can be its own job, or it can be a contract position, or other aspects of those jobs can be done by people who have the physical ability. What that does is it doesn't just stop for older people. It does also get rid of some of the discrimination based on gender.
All right, here's another interesting question, which is probably almost discriminatory in the way I'm going to ask it. But anyway, I'm just going to go ahead, charge on. How may older workers need to adapt how they've been doing things, how they've been approaching the workforce? If you were going to get a room full of older workers and you could get on a soapbox, what would you say?
Three things.
Okay.
The first is, you know, plan for your health and well-being and your social engagement as well as your money. And one of the things we often see, and this is particularly gendered, but not only gendered. Let me give you the example that you've probably all heard of. Man work, and we use a man very specifically. Man works his entire life, comes into the workforce in his early 20s, retires in his mid 60s, dies within a year.
Oh yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, yeah.
Or leaves, and then within 2 years is so depressed that he's socially isolated and lonely. And really nothing's changed in his life except that he's left the workforce.
Yeah.
And so it's important for us to understand and prepare and think about what is the workforce giving us that we are either going to need to adapt, change, replace. We know that the single most important thing for your social well-being and your feelings of wellness as we age, and this is true in retirement as well specifically, is a sense of purpose. And it doesn't need to be the purpose is to get up and work 9 to 5 as a person who, you know, does X.
Yeah.
Although it may be. I love what I do. I'm never going to stop doing what I do. I may do it a slightly different way. I may do it in chunks that have different breaks involved in them and so on and so forth. But I may do it as a volunteer. I may do it as something that's more closely connected with my local community. It really doesn't matter as long as you feel like you've got purpose. Your purpose could be getting up and taking care of your grandkids. That may give you purpose. It may be that you want to volunteer your time on boards or become a museum docent or start a running group. It doesn't really matter. The on-off to from full-time work to no work often only manages to be useful for about a year to 18 months. It's really more of a sabbatical. Yeah. And so what I would offer people, I would ask people to think about chunks of their life and where meaning and engagement is in. So if you have worked for, I don't know, municipal government for 40 years, yeah, you may want 18 months to actually do nothing at all or to travel or to, I don't know, whatever it is that you want to do. But what's your plan on a going forward basis? So we need to think about the social and personal and well-being. And often, you know, our good thinking and our good social engagement is through a workplace environment. It also means that our social standing may also come from that. So respect and the idea of being a leader in your field, whatever your field is, often comes from. So that's the first thing I'd say. Second thing I think I'd say is completely get rid of the idea of the three-stage life. Go to school, then you go to work, and then you retire. It's nonsense. We don't do it now, and we certainly aren't going to do it in the future. People will go back to school, continuous learning, micro-credentialing, expanding your opportunities. And particularly if you ask people who are 55 and especially 60 plus, micro-credentialing and expanding their knowledge base is one of the things that they want to do the most.
Mm.
And whether that means university or some other type of training or supports or skill development or certificates, the idea that you're doing that at the beginning and then you're moving into your work, maybe you upskill a little bit, but then you don't go and learn somewhere else is gone. So reframe that whole idea, toss it out and start again and think about who you are and what you want to do. And that's going to be really important because retirement, as we think about it, just doesn't exist anymore. And it's going to be extremely rare. The last thing I would say is when you're doing your thinking about, you know, what you want to do in the last third of your life, use that language. So what is your last third of your life going to mean to you and how you want to design that as purposely as you did the other two thirds of
that has me really thinking. What can organizations do to actively attract and retain and support older work?
Start using the conversation, first of all. Actually, the same way that we do with anything else at DEI. The idea that it's not a problem and that nobody knows about it, and if you don't talk about it, somehow it will go away, is nonsense. And isn't authentic. And so co-design solutions with your multi-generational teams to improve a multi-generational workforce. And that matters. You need to have those different voices at the table. So purposefully get together as a working group and co-design some solutions. The next thing you should do is do an audit, an ageism audit. An ageism audit should look at both areas of explicit discrimination, like mandatory retirement's a perfect example.
Right.
As well as, you know, use some of the resources on our Living, Learning, Earning Longer websites or others to make sure that you're not using language in the way that we didn't use gender language, in the way that we're not thinking about other forms of discrimination, but that the language is actually age neutral or age inclusive, both overtly and in hidden ways. Fresh, young, innovative, you know, like those kinds of ideas, take them out. What is it you're really trying to get at, and get rid of some of those language. And the third piece is make sure that you got visual representation, and that these are learnings that we had in other areas in DEI that we need as well.
Of course.
So if your company only has pictures of young people, that's not going to be so great. If your company only is advertising using imagery that is ageist or age specific, you got to think of that as well. And make sure that when you're doing internal recruiting, for larger companies is such an important thing, particularly if you're trying to build that bench strength, that you are both visually representing in your call for interest, and you're reaching out, making that extra bit of a reach to some workers who may have historically felt like they were discriminated against or not welcome. Do some specific outreach. And again, we did that with, you know, other areas,
diversity,
equity, inclusion. Some companies will even move to very specific programs. Maybe many of you will remember the Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway show called The Intern. And that was an example where Robert De Niro, who had been a former CEO and whatever else, became an intern to young CEO Anne Hathaway, and then the movie unfolds. But that is an example of kinds of senior internship programs or return to work programs that are really catching on. And again, we did this as well with often women who left the workforce to raise children, and then we're trying to do return to work after those types of gaps. That may be something that you think about as well. And certainly we know it's so welcomed that it's likely to be successful, and then you're likely to become a model for others as well.
It's interesting you should say that. I, you know, when I do my video editing, you know what I never see in all these stock footage that I need to, that I'll cut in? I never see older workers. I never see older workers. They're getting a little bit more diverse in terms of skin color, but it's gendered. It's so aggravating.
It is. And I mean, even adding very specific language, like in your diversity call out at the bottom, if you have one, we welcome people from all blank, 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 ages in there as well. You know, over the age of, I mean, I suspect that you need people who are, you know, if you do have an age requirement, like they need to be able to serve alcohol as an example, okay, that's going to be an appropriate thing to say, you know. Applicants must be over the age of whatever, and it's because that's required by some type of law or policy. That's fine. But you can say, you know, we welcome all, and at least put ages in there.
Right.
At a minimum. And then as an extra prompt, you may say, you know, we are an age inclusive employer, and we welcome people from all ages to apply, including older workers. Again, we've used those types of languages in past around other areas. It makes people feel really comfortable. Okay, I actually can. I'm, you know, 71 years old. I feel like this job is either something I either know how to do or could learn to do. This company is a place where I will be safe and included. It really can help. And it's free and easy to do that.
Yes, I love that. Okay. Where can someone learn more about including older workers in their workforce?
There are a lot of great places that you can look, but perhaps not as many as you might imagine. And because this is an area where I want you to be able to also share your knowledge, I will recommend that you think about it and in a leadership role as well. So for instance, I can tell you, if you're in Alberta, we did a whole bunch of work with the Chamber of Commerce in Alberta, and particularly Calgary and Edmonton did a bunch of stuff. If you're in Alberta, as an example, that Chamber of Commerce is there. If you look, we talked a little bit about the Living, Learning, Earning Longer, LLEL work at the AARP, and it's global work. It just happens to be living on the AARP website. It includes Canada. You can find great materials, trainings, videos, resources, toolkits at their website as well. Our website, canage.ca, has also got great resources, and we're really excited to be able to share information about this. We really need you to take some great leadership opportunities and share your success stories or challenges on things like this at podcasts, but also at local conferences as well. Let's get it on the agenda.
Well, thanks, Laura. I am thinking about how I want to spend my last 30 years and what I want to, or my last third, as you said, what I want that to look like. However, we have reached the end of this episode. Thanks for listening out there. We'll catch you next time when I talk with another insightful guest.